Let the light of the whole world dies when day is done.
Welcome to New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. This program explores evolving human potentials in an evolving world. Each week I interview people who are really at the leading edge of bringing us new realities and new ideas about the changing nature of our human potential. Tonight's guest is someone who's been on my television show before. He is a theologian. He is a scholar. He is also someone investigating other realms of reality. Dr. Michal Ledwith is with me today, and he's the author of this new book called The Orb Project with Klaus Heinemann and forward by William Teller. Michal, are you there?
I am indeed, Alan. Good to be with you.
Okay, now we really want to focus tonight. I know you have a lot of expertise in many areas, including the lost years of Jesus and the nature of science and theology. But tonight's show, let's focus on this phenomena called orbs, and I'll just give a little rundown of what I know is that these balls of light or discs of light seem to be appearing all over on digital cameras, and they don't seem to have any logical explanation. They don't seem to be dust particles or water vapors, although they may at some point, but they seem to have their own texture and phenomenology to them. And I would say no one really can say what they are. What's your research around the topic?
Well, you're quite right, Alan, that all over the world, in all sorts of situations, people now are noticing these spheres in their orbs, in their pictures that they take with digital cameras. And I think that's our first clue right there. Because a digital camera is sensitive to the nearest band of infrared radiation to us. So that band is just outside of what we can see with the naked eye. Now, we all know that some insects, say like honeybees or horses or dogs, can see in those realms already, even though you and I normally cannot. So since digital cameras, which are, as I say, more sensitive to that part of the spectrum, since they've become common, people are getting more and more images of these mysterious objects. And, of course, the big question is, what are these objects, and why do they appear at certain times, and why do they appear not at all at other times? And I think that, sorry?
No, go ahead. You think?
I think that we are on the verge of a great new discovery into the nature of reality. I think there are times in human history when we get some information that really results in a major paradigm shift. I mean, I suppose in some sense, when we began to realize that the Earth was not flat, or that the Earth, even though spherical, was not at the center of the solar system, like at the time of Galileo and Giordano Bruno. And when we began to discover, for instance, in the last, within the last two centuries or less, that there were things that we couldn't see, like viruses and bacteria that caused disease. I mean, we had a whole new shift coming in our knowledge about the nature of the world in which we live. And I think what we are on the verge of seeing now in the orb phenomenon, which is what the book is about, is we are coming to an entirely new understanding about beings who live in different realms of frequency to the ones that you and I inhabit, but are no less real for that. And that is going to set the cat among the pigeons about the way in which we have understood ghosts and the paranormal and the esoteric, etc., in the past, because we have really had very uninformed and superstitious ways of looking at all of those things, which is a great pity, because these are great realities. So if we are living in a universe which has different layers because the levels of frequency change from one layer to another, then we realize that this is an entirely different setup than most of us have ever imagined. And, you know, there are things that happen every day, Alan, today, which 50 or 100 years ago would have been regarded as totally miraculous. Even you and I, here am I on the West Coast, the United States, and you're in New York, we're having a conversation. I mean, that would be regarded as absolutely paranormal, you know, 100 years ago. Anyway.
But the question is, I mean, yes, they're appearing with digital cameras, and yes, we're, I mean, the shift in paradigms seems to be happening with this phenomena and in the sciences and in the way we look at the world in general. But the other question about this is, are the veils between the dimensions getting thinner? Are we actually accelerating at a rate where we are merging dimensions somehow? Does that seem to be happening?
Well, it could well be happening. I don't know. Obviously, the thing that is penetrating the veil in this instance is a technology, digital mm-hmm. photography. But uh-huh. is that signifying a thinning of the veils? It may well be. But I'm not in a position, you know, tonight to be able to say that because I don't have the evidence of that. But there is one thing I would mention, mm-hmm. and that is, we do not see orbs with the naked eye normally, as I've said. We need the digital camera or an IR camera or something of that nature.
Right.
Now, if, on the other hand, we realize that our eyes are seeing an awful lot more in normal vision every day than the brain allows to pass through into consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because the brain simply could not cope with the amount of information that comes through our eyes. So it has to filter out what is not relevant to ordinary everyday living. Paying my mortgage, doing my job, pleasing my boss, looking after my workers, taking the kids to school, etc. Now, orbs don't fall into those everyday categories of what's necessary to live a normal life. However, if you bombard your brain with evidence for the existence of these realities, and you would do that by, say, on a regular period every day, maybe take 100 or 200 pictures over a long period of time, something wonderful starts to happen because you're going to start seeing those orbs with your naked eye, and you will not need the camera to spot them anymore. You may wish to photograph them for record purposes, but the brain will allow the images that are already coming in through your eye to be seen.
Yeah.
So in that sense, the dimensions are breaking down.
Well, I want to pick up on that in a second. I do want to say first, though, that you will be giving a keynote talk about this topic on November 10th in New York, down at 49 White Street, which is at the Synagogue of the Arts. That's Saturday, November 10th. Starting at 3:30, and then we're actually going to be showing a film called Orbs Lifting the Veil. I think that's the name of the film. That's a world premiere by Hope and Randy Mead. Miho will be speaking there along with Nancy Burson and a few other very high-energy people. Tanya Maidenford, who spoke in Sedona at the Orbs conference there. And I'll probably get one or two more scientists to do a very nice analysis, people who are open-minded to this phenomena. And so what you were saying before was that we don't see the orbs, but in my, I was introduced to the orbs at the Rampa School of Enlightenment, and it was quite a breakthrough for me when I realized that I could also take pictures of these orbs, that they would appear for me, I would sense them. So what I'm saying is there's a sense sometimes for me that these beings are around, and if I point the camera in a certain direction, they most likely will appear. Do you find there's a sensing of them with you?
Yes. I normally can see them myself without any sensing other than that, and that's probably better, but there is definitely, I think, a sense of presence there that you can acquire very readily. And like you, I first heard of orbs at the Rampa School of Wisdom, Ancient Wisdom, and Rampa gave a very long teaching about them 5 or 6 years ago. I'd never heard of them before that, except in a reference in J.C. Knight's own autobiography, A State of Mind. So it was at that point, if say in 2001 or two, inspired by what I had heard at that teaching, that I started out on this journey, and someone kindly said to me a few weeks ago that I've probably got the largest collection of orb photographs in the world, namely about 150,000 images. So I've devoted a lot of time to studying the phenomenon and trying to draw, you know, the best understanding that we can of what's going on, how we might best take these pictures, in what circumstances, what are they telling us about reality and so forth, and that's what's in the book.
Well, the other part of the book are these very sophisticated, complex, I mean, what you seem to be getting are not just these circles of light, but they start to take on various forms and shapes, and they start to expand, it looks like. Is there anything you're doing to make that happen?
Well, there's no doubt, Alan, that something does start to occur once you spend a lot of focus and a lot of time and consistency on doing this. Things start to happen. And certainly some of the very dramatic pictures that I have taken, say of the Torsion vortices in particular, which as far as I'm aware have not appeared anywhere else in the world,
no,
I have no doubt at all that the reason that those vortices appeared was because of prolonged focus over a very long time. And now my friend, Professor William Tiller, who has the foreword to the entire book, J.C. Knight has the preface to my own section, adding her own wisdom to it. But Professor Tiller believes that you can actually tune an area or a location as well as an instrument, say like a camera, so that more dramatic results and more complete communication happens between those dimensions if you repeat the same thing time after time after time in the same place with the same instrument, with the same people, etc. So I think that is something really, really vital in this investigation.
So that's what you've been doing. I'm looking at the pictures of this circular theia, this torsion theia. Does this happen? So you kind of train the place, what they call entrainment with this location, which is probably your front yard somewhere, right?
Yes, effectively all of the pictures I've taken, Alan, are taken in my own property. I mean, I've always said to people, don't go out to apparently high energy places in the dead of night, risking life and limb in the darkness, because that's when we believe the ghostly and paranormal appear. Sit on your own front porch, and it'll do just as well, and you can do it in the daytime just as easily as at nighttime. This is why I think, you know, our whole vocabulary and understanding about what ghosts are is in for a radical shift. And I think, you know, as I said earlier, you know, you and I talking tonight would be regarded as a miracle a century ago. I think we will eventually end up, once the scientific equipment and dedication is there, with being able to communicate with beings in those realms just as easily as you and I are communicating across 3,000 miles tonight.
Well, have you gotten any communication? Since you've really been around them, I mean, they're probably everywhere, but you've really kind of had some telepathic synchronicity or connection with them. What messages do you feel have come to you from these beings, these entities?
Well, that's complicated to go into, and I'm extremely suspicious of telepathy, and I know it's a reality, but it's extremely subjective. So it's very hard to be objective about it. That's my only problem with it. I know it's real, but to be sure it's genuine is not so easy. And what I was trying to do in producing this book is to sort of give the hard facts that I was aware of in the hope that more people would get involved and would be able to build on what we have set down here and not be led astray off into blind alleys of one kind or another. Now, I did establish a very cumbersome process of communication, which it would be a bit long to try and go into here. That was quite interesting in itself. But I think that we will develop instrumentation to be able to communicate with these beings, because in my own Orb DVD, which is coming out in about 4 weeks' time, called Exploring the World of Orbs, I will postulate there the existence of realms, you know, that correspond to those levels of light frequency that we're receiving. So it's not just infrared light that we're receiving. There is actually an infrared realm, and the other frequencies of the spectrum are real as well, like the X-ray spectrum must have corresponding to it an X-ray realm and a gamma-ray realm, etc. So
I think that we will develop
means of a more direct communication with those areas, just like in the past we developed means of communication between Europe and North America, and that we can communicate now with spacecraft, you know, on the outer limits of our own solar system. All of these things would have been regarded as quite incredible, even in our own lifetime.
Yes,
so I think that stage is going to happen. And I think when we do, all of the stuff that we have believed about the paranormal, about the supernatural, about the things that we call spirit, about what we call ghosts, etc., we're going to get a completely enlightened and improved understanding of what those are. Because the orbs do extrapolate themselves, if I may call that, into sort of forms like smoke or fog. And when they do that, they often take on shapes resembling physical bodies here, and I'm quite sure what has given rise to the phenomenon of ghosts and all of the things that unfortunately are tied with it around this time of year, tomorrow especially, because Halloween, as you know, has drifted so far away from the wonderful festival it was to the bizarre and the ghoulish now. It's really, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum to where it should be. It's the Celtic New Year, full of life and hope and joy.
Well, what you said here is very interesting, because it seems like obviously life seems to be abundant throughout the universe, and I think we'll be getting proof of that in the next few years. But if it's also abundant on this realm, it must also be abundant in the other levels of frequency, in which case then we really have to redefine our whole concept of what life is and what consciousness is and what the nature of a spiritual existence is. And I think this is where the orbs are leading us.
Yeah, and we also have to redefine our understanding of reality, because obviously there are many layers now of reality that we did not suspect. You know, we talk about, is there life on some planet somewhere? But that is still in this realm of frequency.
Yeah.
Now we're talking not about extraterrestrial life, we're talking about interdimensional life.
Right, right. The strange thing is there's a whole paradigm of people out there who just, I don't know if they'll ever really be ready for this. I mean, there's so many people that are just caught up in their very mundane football. I don't mean to judge anyone for, you know, but there's some people who just, you know, that they're just not gonna get it, and it's frustrating to me that.
Well, that's fine, you know, Alan. There are people who believe that the world was made by God 6,000 years ago during a particularly busy week. So, I mean, that's fine. That's their privilege if they want to, you know, adopt a certain attitude towards information. That's fine. We're not missionaries.
No, but
we're not trying to convert people to points of view. We're interested in laying out information as fairly and objectively as we can. There are people who will want to know that because they know that this is the truth about the reality we're all living in. There are others who will have no interest for any number of good reasons, and many more bad ones probably. But that's their privilege. I mean, we're not out to persuade anyone.
No, but the exciting thing about this is really about what the core teaching of the Rampa School is, which is making known the unknown. That's what I feel is one of the foundations of that. And when we've actually tapped into this realm of orbs, it seems like there's another layer of the unknown that just has revealed itself to us and stepped in and has created a whole new reality for us to explore. It's very exciting.
It is absolutely exciting, Alan. I could not agree more with what you've said.
So what I get is that when we're beyond our base level of survival and power and the first three seals, we're able to tap into the more subtle nature of what it is to be human. And that's the frustration I have, in the sense that more people don't seem to be coming from that. And that's fine, as you say, but it's something is coming to planet Earth, and I think people need to be aware of it. And
Yes, well, that's all we can do, you know, is put out the information there. And I don't think there was ever any time in human history when some new information that basically pulled the rug from under the traditional way of looking at reality. There was never a time that happened that a lot of people didn't get upset and feel that they were losing, you know, all their firm footing on reality. This is not so. I mean, this is a wonderful understanding of reality. And as I have said at some conferences at which I've spoken recently on the orb phenomenon, I've talked about orbs all over the world, actually, in Australia and Japan and South America, etc. But, you know, I said, I'm not here to collect a wonderful photograph album of orb pictures. I'm trying to understand what the implications of this phenomenon is for us. Because this phenomenon and several other phenomena are pointing us in a new direction, like even in quantum physics. So what I get from this, bottom line, grassroots here, cut to the chase, is that I am seeing that there are beings that exist in other dimensions from the one you and I are sitting in tonight, and the difference between that dimension and this is basically one of frequency. Now, if we're living in a frequency-dominated universe, then all of the information that has hit the headlines in the last few years, you know, preeminently, I suppose, our own school, the Ramp School of Ancient Wisdom, things that have hit the headlines more recently, like The Secret and the Law of Attraction and all that stuff, it's all about energy. And we know that, and this is really the dark night of the soul experience, we know, if we accept that the kind of frequency we ourselves are putting out there is magnetizing to us experiences of that same frequency. In other words, if I feel I'm a victim, if I feel I'm unfortunate, that life has not been fair to me, woe is me, and all that stuff, I am only going to attract more of it to me. And on the other hand, if I decide that seeing reality is frequency-based, if I change the frequency, then realities of that changed frequency, whether that be joy or wealth or whatever else, is going to be magnetized to me as well. Mm-hmm. So the trouble with this and the disattraction of it for most people is that most people want to be taken care of. They want to be somebody up there watching them who will take responsibility and look after them. Whereas now we're seeing the truth of the teachings of Jesus Christ in particular about the power that is within us as children of the Most High God. We all have that energy coursing through us. We channel it into various areas depending on what we have accepted. If I have accepted doom and gloom and victimization, we are channeling that divine energy as children of God into producing more of the same in our life's experience. That, to my mind, is the greatest lesson that the orb phenomenon has to teach us in these early stages of the investigation.
So in a sense, you can bring it down to that the orb phenomenon shows us the power of the manifestation of our thoughts in creating reality in that sense.
Yes, because what any particular orb phenomenon, or any of the many orb phenomena are showing, because there are many varieties of them, is that reality is frequency based. And those entities that are there in the infrared realm or some other realm are just as real as you and I are, because I'm sure to them, you and I sitting here in the visible light world would be just as ghostly as they seem to us. And you know, we have got away from the idea that the Earth is at the center of the whole universe, and that the visible physical universe is much more vast than we could ever have imagined, even relatively recently. Now we're faced with an even more magnificent panorama, because we realize now that there's not just a huge physical universe stretching out there like the Hubble telescope can show us any night we care to look, but there is even more magnificent dimensions and vistas beyond that in other frequencies, which are presumably much greater than the one we're in.
Well, what's even more amazing just about the visible universe is that that's only a small fraction. That is only 5% of all the matter and energy that is said to exist, most of it being dark matter and dark energy.
Absolutely correct, yes.
So with this,
but you see, this is not, Alan, what I would not like to happen is that people sort of get into a feeling of being threatened or helplessness. When we realize that reality is made up of frequency, then the next step to realize is that we can control that ourselves.
That is one of the core teachings of the Lampa School, I know, and the power that we live in the frequencies we emanate, and we have the will through the miraculous vehicle of our brain to tune to any frequency that we put our intention on. And just for people to experiment by doing that, by intending a new frequency will show up in their life. It's truly the workings of the divine essence of humans. And I think that's what's so important about the teachings of frequencies. And it is what the orbs are saying, because I think people who aren't even open to orbs won't even see it as a possibility of being entities at all. You know, so the orb phenomena challenges people to move to a new frequency of possibility. Does that make sense to you?
It absolutely does. That's what I'm trying to express, that, you know, it's not just the wonders of some of these pictures that we get, or the fact that we can see them with the naked eye after some time, after a couple of years of practice. But the message is that these are real beings, just as real as you and I, except their frequency is different from ours. So now we begin to see that truly the universe is frequency-based. If the universe is frequency-based, we know, you and I, that we can take the bull by the horns and we can control our own reality. It's exactly as you said, the core of the teaching of the Rampa School of Ancient Wisdom. And I think that this is something that everybody needs to hear, at least that they have been offered the experience of realizing this in their own lives. Whether they do or not, of course, that is their absolute right and entitlement not to look at it. But at least it's there for those who want it. And I think we have, a magnificent new window opening up on the universe and where we fit into it and how we can dictate our lives under God, as the Constitution says, to, manifest the kind of existence we would wish to have instead of being pawns, being buffeted around by much more powerful people, forces, and agencies. Which often, can cause people to get into a completely different situation than they would wish to have.
Well, another key teaching of Rampa is also that reality isn't out there. Reality is the feeling inside. Reality is an internal phenomenon. It's how we feel. It's our attitude. It's everything, as Rampa always said. It's the feeling of what we think is out there, which really is the reality that we live in, the frequency. That's why I say it comes to me, about frequency specifically and reality in general, is that it's an inner creation. It's not the effect of the world on the human. It's the human's effect on the world that creates reality. And that's a big turnaround for people in their understanding of the nature of reality.
It is, but it's also if we can convey the significance of this phenomenon or these phenomena correctly, I think it's also a time of marvelous opportunity for people. And so many people who feel they're in a dead end, or they're depressed, or they don't have room to think of anything except just surviving the rat race of everyday life. I think this information is a great lifesaver for them, and it's opening up a crack that I think will only widen with the passage of time to see vast new horizons and possibilities, not just about beings that live in other dimensions, but how we can, you know, use the dimension that we are in to accomplish quite significantly different things, much more to our taste than we're experiencing now. That's the real message, I think.
No, I think that is a great message. But let me ask you, I mean, just to kind of play with the idea of telepathy, what are the orbs saying? What are they like as entities? If you could take, you know, a guess, or if you can just hypothesize, what are these beings? Is there a message that they have for us specifically from entity to entity? Is there anything that you've been told specifically? I know telepathy is not an absolute fact, but you've been in the school for quite a while, a master, and I think you must have gotten some impressions of what these beings are saying. Is there anything you can share about that?
Yeah, well, I did say that I of course absolutely accept the reality of telepathy. It is real.
Right.
I am also, of course, equally assured that there are many things claimed to be telepathic that are not, because the people just don't have the ability.
Right.
So that is, you know, the fact that a person can be a marvelous concert pianist doesn't mean that everyone has to be a concert pianist. So, like,
right,
if someone is able to do telepathy, it doesn't mean that everyone's claim to be telepathic is valid. And all I'm saying is, if someone is putting out something there that is claimed to come through telepathy, I'm always a little bit nervous about it because I'm not sure whether it's true or not.
But
I'm not saying that I don't believe in it. Of course, I do believe in it. But all I have to say is that we just have to use some form of discernment as to whether this is true information or someone's fertile imagination.
Right. I follow you, but is there anything that you felt that was communicated to you?
Well, I said to you earlier in the program that I did have communication, but it was not telepathic.
Oh.
It was a very cumbersome, slow, but very rewarding process of communication, which would take me too long to describe, as I said earlier, in the program like this. But it extended over several months. And was not telepathic.
Oh, I see. Okay. It was
another method.
Oh, okay. I just was wondering what type of entities you feel these beings are. I mean, lots of people have opinions about aliens and other non-terrestrial beings, but I haven't really heard anybody's opinions about what these beings are like as a...
Well, Alan, you know, there it seems to me from the research that I have done and others as well, that there are as many types of orbs as there are types of people. And it's not that there's just one out there. That's why, you know, I deliberately use the singular and the plural of phenomenon. I mean, there is an orb phenomenon, but there are many orb phenomena. And, you know, we have to, I think, as a first stage, if we're going to get anywhere here, to get out of the imprisonment of thinking that the orbs are there for your and my benefit. You know, people sometimes say to me, what are orbs supposed to do for me?
Right.
And I say, what if orbs said to me, what are these people supposed to do for me, an orb? Why do we think we're the center of everything and that nothing can exist on us unless it's there to serve me? That's something like people believing in guides, spirit guides, and so forth. You know, that some being should be there to shepherd me all my life. Well, that's a terrible condemnation, isn't it?
No,
anyway.
I agree with you there. There are some evidence, though, that they do seem to gather around music and around celebration and more joyful events. That is something that has been documented, it seems like. Is that true?
That is true, but I would think it might be better if we took that back to its core.
Uh-huh.
It's not so much that, you know, and some people will say they're attracted to spiritual occasions, and some people will say they're attracted to parties, and some people will say this, that, or the other. All of this is true. There are certain circumstances in which you will find more orbs than others.
Right.
Now, the thing that really determines that, I think, is the frequency of the gatherings.
Uh-huh.
So it's not so much happiness or religiousness or lightheartedness or whatever. It is the frequency that's being emanated by whatever celebration, a party or religious service or whatever else, that makes it more attractive for the orbs to manifest themselves. Now, we have shown abundantly, number one, that obviously there are false orb pictures that can come from dust particles and rain and fog, etc. It is equally true that the fact that there are false orb pictures, that there are real orb pictures as well, and that it is certainly true after abundant investigation that the orb phenomenon cannot be explained away as pollen in the air or dust particles or atmospheric water or anything else. There's just far, far too much evidence for that. So we don't need to go there.
Right. Well, I think it's very miraculous, and it is evidence that there is a frequency shift happening, and people just say digital cameras, but actually I remember seeing some blue orbs in a camera that I took with film many years ago around Mount Rainier when I was first down in Washington. So it's not just digital cameras, isn't that true?
That's correct. It's not just digital cameras, but the reason why you see much more in digital cameras is for the reason I explained earlier on.
Yes.
The digital camera is able to access levels of frequency which a film camera is not. Now, in other words, if an orb is going to manifest on film, and I have many of these examples myself from, I have some good examples from 1993, uh-huh. 15 years ago almost. So if they're going to manifest on film, on regular film, I mean, as opposed to infrared film, then the orbs would have to lower their frequency more than if they were lowering it to be captured on a digital camera.
I see. So, okay, that explains. I mean, this is very nice that, you know, I think you're one of the few people that have put this much time into investigating the phenomena, and it is a budding field of study, and I think, has any videos been taken of orbs at all, do you know?
Oh, yes, I have some myself. For reasons, again, too long to go into here,
yes.
I explain in the book, and it will be expanded more in my own orb DVD, The Mysterious World of Orbs. I'll be putting details of that on my own website, hamburgeruniverse.com,
yes,
if you're interested. But I think that we're only at the beginnings, and I think there's much more exciting stuff coming up right away once we get into this and are able to have more sophisticated instrumentation and help like that. But the orbs are not seen by reflected light. In other words, if I take a picture of you with a flash camera,
yes,
your image is recorded on the CCD, the plate of the digital camera, by light bouncing off you and coming back into the lens. Now, I discovered early on that the orbs were not being recorded by reflected light, just like people and dogs and cats and trees and houses were.
Uh-huh.
Because I discovered that the light from the orbs was coming slightly afterwards. Now, we're talking about microseconds here. But the light from the orb was coming later than reflected light. And I going back to my old classes in physics, I happened to remember what we learned about the process of fluorescence in physics. In other words, when the photons from the camera flash hit the orb, they turn into electrons and they spin the electrons in the orb, which tells you they're physical in some form, up to a higher shelf, as they say in physics. It's like blowing up a balloon. And then when the stimulus stops, which is the stimulus from the camera flash, which is only maybe a thousandth of a second, when the stimulus stops, the orb shrinks back close to its original size, slightly larger. And the surplus electrons that can no longer fit inside the shrinking balloon are expelled from the orb, and they turn into light photons. And it's those light photons that are registered on the camera slightly after the reflected light. So we are capturing orbs mainly by fluoresced light, not reflected light. That means for most cases, you will always need, even in broad daylight, a camera flash to register them better. It's not always necessary, but in the normal course of events, it's far better, even at high noon in brilliant sunshine, to use a flash, because that's how we see them, through fluorescence, not reflection.
That is a great observation. That's really brilliant, and I hope you share that at the upcoming conference
I certainly will. I'm very much looking forward to that conference, Alan, because, you know, it is, for all intents and purposes, the official launch of our book.
Yes.
The official launch of Randy and Hope's DVD on the Orbs the Veil is Lifting, and my own DVD will be available about 4 weeks after that, which has about 500 pretty extraordinary images of orbs with a commentary by myself and an explanation.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. Yes, November 10th in New York City, 49 White Street. You can go to newrealities.com, and on the right-hand side of that website, there's a special section for featured events. It says the Orb Conference. Click on there, or you can also call 212-473-6388 and order a ticket. I am talking with Michal Ledwith, who was one of the stars of What the Bleep and is the author of this new book, co-author with Klaus Heinemann of The Orb Project, published by Beyond Words Publishing, a division of Simon & Schuster. He is also featured in this new movie out called Orbs, The Veil is Lifting, by Hope and Randy Mead. Any closing words about orbs that you would like people to know?
Well, as I say, I think, Alan, we're poised on the brink of a great explosion of discovery about the nature of the world in which we live and the human capabilities within it. I look forward very much to sharing, hopefully, with some at least of your listeners who may come to the conference when we can explore all these at length.
Great, thank you. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We are on the brink of something new emerging within the mind of humanity, and it is the unknown, and all we can, and the orbs are a first manifestation of some, I think, even greater phenomenon that are going to take us by surprise. But, you know, Heraclitus said, expect the unexpected. So here we are.
We're certainly moving into very, very wonderful and surprising times. Positively surprising.
Absolutely. I totally think it is like the end of the dark ages for humanity and moving into the new time. So thank you, Michal, for sharing all your investigations, because you're one of the few people who've put as much energy and time into studying this phenomenon, and I'm sure it will continue.
Well, thank you so much, Alan, for having me on the program. It was a great honor, and I look forward to seeing you very soon.
Yes, so I'm just going to go out by playing this song called The Song of the Soul, and my name is Alan Steinfeld. And if you have any questions, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And if you want to order tickets for the conference coming up, you can call 212-473-6388. That is the Orb Conference, November 10th in New York City. Or check the website newrealities.com. Thank you for listening. And this is The Song of the Soul by Chris Williamson.
Of truth thou hast for me. Open mine eyes, illumine me. Speak.
your